Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. It's the Capital Connection. With us is the State Comptroller, Tom DiNapoli. Always great when he joins us. Welcome back to the Capital Connection, Tom.
Dave, I always look forward to our chats, and there's a lot going on to talk about.
Oh, my goodness. There's so much. There's no way to get it into the 26 or 7 minutes we have today. But let's start rapid fire here, a $254 billion state budget. Now, Tom, many lawmakers that I spoke with, on both sides of the aisle, actually, say it was too heavy on policy and should have stuck to the numbers. And, of course, you said the last time we spoke that the budget was vulnerable because of the federal cuts coming.
Yeah. I mean, look, from the beginning of the process, I don't think that anybody could disagree with the governor's priorities in terms of trying to deal with the affordability challenge that so many New Yorkers and New York families are facing. And certainly recognizing, as you know, we've talked about on the show how many times over the past several months, the state revenue picture has been strong. Revenues have continued to come in stronger than projections. So it was in that context that the governor proposed her initial plan, $252 billion. Of course, the final budget ended up a little higher, $254. No surprise, that's usually what happens. But to the point of your question, there was a delay largely because of these non-monetary items that really seemed to take up most of the time in terms of negotiation, involuntary commitment, the cell phone ban issue, and mask ban. So the challenge is one that we're still trying to assess, right? What will be the final outcome of the deliberations in Washington? You know, the state budget in any given year is 35 to 40% federal dollars that pass through, much of it through the Medicaid program. You know, there's a lot of debate going on now in Washington internally among the Republican majority, and then the House and the Senate have to reconcile whatever they're going to do. But there's no question there will be an impact on a state like New York, and an impact will be negative. Question is how much. So that vulnerability in terms of the spending plan holding together in the face of potential significant federal cuts, the impact of this tariff policy, we see what's been happening with the markets. There's a fair amount of uncertainty. You know, the economic forecasters, they're not often correct, but they have been increasing the probability of a recession. What could that mean as far as revenue coming to the state? So, David, there are a lot of question marks out there. Will this budget plan, particularly when you look at the out years, will we be able to deliver on all the promises, very worthy promises, that were made in this budget?
Yeah. And, you know, one of the biggest items that could impact New York, right, is Medicaid. I see the Senate Majority Leader, John Thune, is now meeting privately with Senate Republicans who are threatening to derail the president's big, beautiful bill that the House passed over what they fear could be substantial cuts to Medicaid. Now, this is really, really a problem for New York.
Well, when you consider the fact that enrollment in New York is high, about 35% of the state's population is on Medicaid, you know, and this is not just, I mean, obviously there are poor folks that depend on this, but, you know, as we know from our own experiences, many people have parents or grandparents. They reach a point in life where they need to be in a nursing home, have long-term care. And, you know, appropriately, you know, working through the legal system, you know, protecting assets, spending down, all of that. You have a lot of middle-class families that end up with their elder loved ones on Medicaid to pay for long-term nursing care. So it is really impacting many families, and it doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat, blue state or red state. It was interesting. a map identified which parts of the country had significant Medicaid enrollment. And it was as many of the red states as it was the blue states, particularly when you get into some of the rural communities. So I do think for the Republicans, the rhetoric about, you know, cutting Medicaid may play in certain quarters, but when it gets down to real impact on people and families, it affects many, many communities. And certainly, putting aside the human impact, the impact on the state budget, you know, obviously would be very, very significant, because New York has been a state that's been generous with our health care system and the safety net program. So that's going to be a real issue. How will they finally resolve it? What will be the impact on New York? If there are cuts, can the state be a backstop to those cuts? That's going to be a big question mark.
It sure is. And where does that money come from? The first thing is the idea that if there is this impact, that lawmakers will have to come in to a special session in the fall to deal with it. Then the question is, and I think there's been some discussion of this already, the rainy day fund.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was one of the concerns that I had. You know, again, the goals in the budget were very, that the governor laid out and sort of the legislature supported were worthy goals. But, you know, the challenge is, are you going to have the dollars here to pay for it, not just today, but down the road? We know that going into the budget process, the out-year budget gaps cumulatively were about $27 billion. I can't give you an answer yet whether those budget gaps are going to be projected to grow in the out years or not. And certainly in the shorter term, you know, within the coming year as this budget is being spent, if those federal cutbacks are significant, you did hear some of the legislators say, well, we'll come back in the fall and we'll deal with it then. But will there be money in the reserves to use, to, you know, for as a backstop? Or will there be cutbacks in programs that, you know, when you think about our local governments, you think about our nonprofits that are putting their budgets together based on what they're hearing from, you know, the budget that was concluded. Will they have to then undo their plans if they're, you know, if they're mid-year cutbacks? So I'm really hoping that we won't see that eventuality, because I just think it transfers the challenge at the state level to the local level and to the nonprofits that they're not in a stronger position to weather. You're right about the reserves. You know, New York has been in a stronger position as far as building up reserves in recent years. But we have to look again. One of the other items that was agreed to, which again, I think from a policy perspective made a lot of sense, because New York was one of the few states that hadn't dealt with this sooner. You know, during the pandemic, David, a number of states used the federal relief money that was coming in to pay off the debt that was owed to the Federal Unemployment Trust Fund. New York was a state that did not choose to do that. So the rates charged, particularly to our small businesses, they are the ones that have to pay this debt off. So one of the better items, I think, was the commitment of the state to pay off that loan to the federal government. But again, it was a little unclear. Is that going to come from the reserves? Which reserves? How much will that leave us? So we really got to see some of the updated numbers from Division of Budget. Look, I'm going to be the optimist and say that, you know, hopefully cooler heads will prevail. We may see some cutbacks, hopefully not as severe, so that this budget can hold together. And then hopefully the economy will stay strong enough that the out-year budget gaps will be reduced as well, and we can still say that our revenues are coming in stronger than projected. But, David, there's still a lot of uncertainty out there. We mentioned Medicaid, but you got SNAP, you know, food programs.
Oh, yeah.
You've got education programs. You got environmental programs. Some of those already have been cut back or delayed. So, you know, it's an evolving picture in terms of what the federal-state relationship is going to be.
Sure is. And the question next would be, should, in hindsight, the governor be handing out $400 checks to New Yorkers in her affordability agenda, or should that money have been held?
Well, there was a fair amount of debate about that. You know, the way the budget was put together, the numbers seem to have added up, at least for the short run. But I think the governor really wanted to put money back in the pockets of hardworking New Yorkers, and certainly the middle-class tax cut for middle-class and for lower-income New Yorkers was a big part of that picture, enhancing the child credit as well, another tax plus. The rebate checks, as you point out, I mean, this was all part of a broader concern on the part of the governor, and the legislature bought into it to say New Yorkers need more money back in their pocket at a time where inflation is still a very big issue and a very big concern. Her initial rebate proposal, as you know, was trimmed down, probably in response to some of the criticisms that it might not have been the best use of the money, but she still was able to get that. She made it clear that was one of her priorities, so we'll see. We'll see how New Yorkers feel when they get those checks in the fall.
Yeah, I just worry about a one-time check. You know, when we had the pandemic, we had all that money. Then there were deadlines on it, and it all went away. We see what happens.
Yeah.
People get disappointed in the end. Well, let's talk a little bit about this new online tool you have, Tom DiNapoli, detailing federal funding disbursements in the state. This on the heels of this federal cutting that's been going on.
Yeah, we just released this. You know, as always, as you know, David, you follow our work. We collect a lot of data. We have a lot of information.
There's a lot of reports on that website.
A lot of reports, a lot of numbers, a lot of dollar signs. But what we really try to do is take the information we have and put it back out in the public arena in a way that informs people, the media, everyday people, elected officials, because we, you know, especially as we go through challenging times, it's important for people to have information. So this is an online resource, and it really just tries to give that information out there in the context of the uncertainty about what the long-term relationship is going to be between Washington and New York State, and what could be the potential impact of cuts on Medicaid, healthcare programs, social welfare, education, public protection, environment, go down all of those different programs that get federal funding, and also looking at, in terms of our state programs, state employees that are tied to federal funds as well. So we're really hoping that this will be a very useful tool for people to utilize. I also mentioned that we put out pretty recently as well, you know, the old Moynihan report that looked at balance of payments, how much money New York sends to Washington versus what we get back. So related to this tool, also, I would suggest people look at our updated balance of payments report. What it shows is that we still, this is somewhat a consequence of the COVID time and all the federal money that came in, contrary to prior trends, we are getting more money back from Washington than we've sent. We're getting back, for every dollar we send to Washington, $1.06 back. So we're still a net gainer. The numbers are getting a little tighter, and we had projected when we first saw that we were becoming a state that gained from the federal government that trend probably wasn't going to hold up as the federal pandemic money was spent down. The concern, David, now is with the change in administration in Washington and these threatened cuts, will that trend, in fact, accelerate? And we'll go back to the usual days where New York gives more money to Washington than we get back. Again, that's why we really have to see as the dust settles and when the Senate and the House finally figure out what the final decisions are going to be on the spending on the federal budget, what will that mean in terms of the money coming to New York and programs? And again, will we have to come up with state dollars to backfill those cuts, or will some of those programs face cutbacks?
You're listening to The Capital Connection. I'm David Gustina. He is the Comptroller of the State of New York, Tom DiNapoli. Tom, I was thinking about you, I don't know how long this was, a few weeks at least, maybe a couple of months, when these announcements kept coming out and the stock market was diving. Then a good announcement, then it would go back up, then it would go back down. Wild swings in the stock market because of the uncertainty. And I mean, I could see you, you know, dabbing your forehead with the sweat that was building. You know, the stock market benefits New York. And there was a lot of talk out there, you know, as to whether this was on purpose, helping his billionaire friends short the market.
Yeah. Well, you know, concern on a couple levels. Obviously, Wall Street had a really good year last year. Profits were up. Bonus pool was up, as we reported earlier in the year. It meant tax revenue was up. Wall Street securities industry is still a big contributor to the economy of New York and the tax revenue that we all benefit from. So if Wall Street is headed to a not-so-good year, there'll be a consequence in terms of revenue coming to the state. You know, too soon to answer that. You know, it's you know, we're not even halfway through the year yet. But obviously my other hat is as trustee of the state pension fund.
Yes.
And our investments, while not reliant totally on the stock market, that is the biggest part of our portfolio. And as you well know, we value the fund on March 31st. So when everything started going into the volatility zone in March, yeah, I'd say it was a challenging time because we really were headed to a very strong year. Remember last year, David, we had an 11.5% positive return. Our long-term goal is 5.9%. Yep. So that's a very strong return. And we were probably headed to a similar double-digit return, and then March came along. You know, I don't have the final numbers yet. We're going to have them soon. So I would say this. Number one, we have a diversified portfolio, so we're not totally reliant on the stock market. The other piece, I guess, of good news timing-wise, as volatile as March was, April was even worse, right? So, you know, frankly, had we valued the fund mid-April, I think it really would have been a much worse outcome. I think where we're going to end up, preliminary numbers that I've seen, we're going to be very close to that 5.9. You know, maybe a little bit below it, but not much. You know, that 5.9 long-term goal is one of the more conservative goals for any public pension plan in the nation. But we made that decision a couple of years ago that because of the volatility that we saw coming, not that we anticipated the tariff issue, we felt it was more important to position the fund in a more conservative way. And I think when we get the final numbers, it'll show the wisdom of that. And, you know, I still have confidence by having a diversified portfolio, not just dependent on the stock market. We have a lot of money in fixed income, and we have put a bit more money in private markets like real estate and private equity and infrastructure funds. And, you know, I think over time those funds will continue to serve us well. So certainly for your listeners who are part of the New York pension system, not to worry. We are staying on top of it. And again, because we go into this challenging time as a well-funded pension plan, it means we're really set up to weather these challenges. And there's no risk to our retirees or those who look forward to retirement sometime in the next few years. We're going to have plenty of money to pay their benefits. It's for the man or woman who is starting to work for the state or local government in the capital region or across New York State that they're starting to work today or tomorrow. Those are the folks that we're planning for 25, 30 years down the road. And that's where, you know, we're concerned about where the markets are headed. But we're on top of it. I have smart people that help us manage the money, and I'm confident we're going to be able to maintain our commitment to retirement security.
Of course, Tom, there's one other little wrinkle here in that, you know, there's a lot of people in the pension fund, but the rest of us, at least many of us who are working, now have 401ks or 403bs, like in my case. Those are all invested in the stock market. So, yeah. You know, when you play around with that, you're not just playing around with New York, you're playing around with the country's money.
You know, and that's one of the challenges. You know, I think it's unfortunate that on the private sector side, you do not have what had been the traditional defined benefit retirement systems. That's kind of gone, you know, ancient history. On the public employment side, fortunate for those who have chosen that as their career, the defined benefit still exists. The plus of the defined benefit, if you're talking about retirement security, is that you're pre-funding the benefit. And based on years of service you put in, you will be promised a certain level of retirement income. When all you have are, you know, the 401ks or the, you know, the other plans, it is very much tied to not just whatever decisions you make on where to put the money, but the timing on when you retire. If you hit the market, just no fault of your own. Let's say you hit 65 and you're going to retire, and the market is way down, and your 401k goes to a 201k. You know, you're stuck, and you're going to have to work probably for a few more years. So that is certainly the vulnerability if you don't have a defined benefit pension. It's why I'm very supportive of the defined benefit pension we have on the public side. You know, there are choices people make. You often make less money in public sector, salary-wise, but you do have a great benefit at the end if you put enough years in.
Tom DiNapoli, State Comptroller of New York. Can you explain a little more to us? I saw that the country lost its AAA credit rating, that Moody's downgraded us.
It's not good news. You know, it's a bad message coming from Moody's. Let's hope they get their act together in Washington to make smart budget decisions in terms of impact on people, but also on the fiscal strength of the nation. Look, David, we didn't touch on this when we talked earlier about impact on the state budget and possible program cuts. What's frustrating to me is that these decisions that they're making, even with some of the spending cuts that I'm concerned about, they're still driving the deficit up. Why? They want to pay for tax cuts for the wealthiest. That really is not a smart priority from my perspective.
$3.8 yep. trillion dollars added to the federal deficit.
With a T, yeah, yeah. And all of it to give tax breaks to the wealthiest. Now, that's not a long-term formula that I think makes sense for the country, and Moody's is sending a message of concern.
Well, and as you suggested earlier, these cuts affect people in red states. And in the end, it's going to come down to voting. And if you're taking people's health care away or their food stamps or other things, they're not going to be happy about it.
No, they're not going to be happy about it. And even in New York, what was one of the big points of division among the Republican caucus? The SALT deduction. How often have we heard about that?
Right.
Even Trump, when he was in my home county of Nassau, when he was running, we're going to change that. You know, the SALT deduction, we're going to, you know, take that so that folks in New York who pay high property taxes, they'll get relief. Well, he changed his tune on that. And as you know, many of the Republicans, including in marginal districts on Long Island and in the Hudson Valley, you know, they said, we're going to make sure that that SALT deduction is, you know, going to be restored to the way it was before. And then it seemed to be, well, we'll at least get the threshold raised. And then they saw in the initial plans it wasn't raised that much. And I guess they're touting as a victory that in the
yeah.
House version.
Congressman House version, Lawler said 40,000, right? Congressman 40, Lawler was touting it.
Yeah, but who knows what's going to happen when the Senate gets through
with it. Right.
Already there's a lot of backtracking. And I understand, look, budgets are always a compromise. But in terms of what impact that has on a place like New York, that's another piece of the puzzle that you know, is potentially going to be very concerning to people. So I think in terms of, you know, as you suggested, despite the victories that Trump and the Republicans had last year, I think you could start to see some of the folks that had been supporting them in 2024 may not be so happy in 2025. And obviously, look, the first big test of all this is 2026. What will be happening with the congressional races, the razor-thin majority in the House? Some inroads were made by Democrats, as you know, in New York State. And there are still some seats in New York that could be easily defined as swing seats in our state. Could we, in fact, be seeing in the not-too-distant future Hakeem Jeffries from Brooklyn, New York, become the next speaker? I would certainly look forward to that happening, and New York could be part of why that would happen. But, you know, we have a ways to go. Still have the 2025
sure
elections, the local elections to get through. But before you know it, we'll be talking 2026.
Now, the other thing I know you've been focused on and have talked about in the past is the funding of the MTA. You know, we have congestion pricing, which the Trump administration, the transportation secretary, has tried to kill. And then they keep extending the deadline. I believe another deadline was this week. I haven't heard what they've done.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, New York Times article, no fewer than six journalists writing on the impacts of congestion pricing. And it seems to be relieving traffic, time to get to work and other things seems to be improving things there. So why kill something if it's working, number one, and it's supposed to fund the MTA, right?
Well, you know, you talk to New Yorkers, if you talk to six of them, you'll get eight opinions, right? So more of the opinions are that it's working from a congestion perspective than not. Not everybody feels that way. Some of it's anecdotal, you know, rather than scientific. What is for sure is that it's been generating the revenue as projected, in fact, coming in a little higher than first projected. And to your point, you know, this was the solution to funding the capital plan. And what I always said, I was agnostic on whether or not you have congestion pricing. That wasn't my area to make a decision on as controller. But I said, if you don't want it, you have to come up with another source for $15 billion for the capital plan, because you can't have the MTA go backwards on the system falling into a state of disrepair, not being able to replace old train and subway car stock. So nobody came up with an alternative. You know, hence, congestion pricing did come to be. The MTA has to make some decisions on how they manage their affairs a little better as well. But, you know, we'll see how it all plays out, how serious the feds are to try to punish New York because of that, and what the courts will do. Attorneys general across the country are going to the courts and saying Washington has made these commitments, they can't pull them back. But it seems that the courts may be the final arbiter on many of these questions about funding and programs.
I think you're right. Well, get ready, Tom DiNapoli. Here it comes. You expect you'll be marching in the Columbus Day, St. Patrick's Day, and other parades in New York with Mayor Andrew Cuomo in the future?
Well, the polls would suggest that might very well be. But, you know, there's still a ways to go for the primary. And, of course, in New York York City, different than most areas in our state,
ranked choice.
They have ranked choice voting. That often proves to create surprises. So I think over the next few weeks, the spirited campaign will become even more spirited. A lot of money will be spent on advertising and TV ads and everything else. So remains to be seen. But certainly the polls would indicate that that might very well be the outcome.
Well, Tom DiNapoli, I have to ask you this question. I know you understand I have to ask you this question, so I'm going to ask it. You have a challenger. Yeah. Drew Warshaw says he wants to focus on affordability in New York. That primary's not till 2026, Tom. You've been reelected again and again and again statewide. I imagine you don't know who he is and you're not really worried.
Well, I don't know who he is. We'll certainly take every race seriously, but I'm very proud of the record that I've achieved and that my terrific team has achieved on behalf of all the people of New York State. I'm privileged to be serving the people as state controller, and I'm hopeful that my contract will be extended for another 4 years. But I never shied away from an election and looking forward to another run at it.
All right, we are out of time. He is the state controller of New York State. Tom DiNapoli takes the time to talk to listeners every time I ask him. If he's not otherwise detained, he joins us. And I can't tell you how important it is for New Yorkers to hear from their public officials. So, Tom, thanks again, and we'll catch up with you next time.
Dave, I always love the conversation with you. So thank you for inviting me back again and again.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. We'll be right back.